always by boys who were trying to get into her pants, and then, only after a great deal of persuasion and manipulation, of dropped hints and innuendos and excruciatingly thoughtful conning. Yet here was Atlas's mom, offering up the most expensive, exquisite items Calliope had ever laid eyes on, without any sort of prompting at all. Calliope didn't understand. She'd only met the woman 5 minutes ago. Maybe Atlas's judgment of her character was good enough for Mrs. Fuller, she thought uneasily. Or maybe the Fullers were genuinely nice people. Her mind flashed to that waitress at the Nuage, to the old man in India, to poor, adoring Thomason, Bryce's friend, whom she'd taken a loan from and left without a backward glance. They had all trusted her, and she'd cheerfully turned around and violated that trust. Maybe they had been genuinely nice people, too. Calliope wouldn't know, because she had never stuck around long enough to find out. She felt shame rise up in her throat as if it were a physical thing, horrible and blocky, like that time she'd tried to swallow one of Mrs. Houghton's rings and almost choked on it. "What on earth have you been doing?" her mom had screamed, giving her 6-year-old shoulders a little shake. What on earth had she been doing all these years, Calliope thought, as some core part of her worldview began to crumble. She felt like she was looking at herself from the outside in, as if she were seeing herself through someone else's contacts. It made her dizzy. Somehow, mechanically, she unscrewed her own small drops and fastened the spectacular pink diamonds into her ears. "They're beautiful. Thank you," she whispered, leaning toward the insta-mirror. The stones were radiant against the smooth curve of her cheek. She wanted them, and she hated herself for taking them, and she couldn't look away from them. The doorbell rang, and everyone momentarily forgot Calliope as a sudden influx of people poured into the room. The hum of voices grew louder, all of them laughing and complimenting and greeting one another. "Say good to Mom," she whispered, turning aside, and closed her eyes against the dizziness as she began to compose under her breath. "Mom, you'll never guess what I'm wearing." Forget Nadav. They would have to leave in the middle of the party, catch a flight down to South America. These earrings would set them up for several years at least. She couldn't finish the sentence. Calliope knew this was her chance, the kind of opportunity that would come along only once in a lifetime. And yet here she was, freezing up like a complete newbie. "Callie," Atlas said as he pushed his way toward her, and Calliope let out a strange sigh of relief. She would finish the message later. "A few of my friends are here. I'd love for you to meet them." He nodded toward the entry hall, which was becoming even more packed, filled with teenagers and adults in their perfectly creased tuxes and elegant black or white gowns. Calliope had always loved moments like this, glamorous and expensive, money softening the edges of it all. But looking at all the people gathered at the Fullers, she felt strangely bereft. These weren't her friends. This wasn't her laughter and gossip. And this certainly wasn't her boyfriend standing next to her. She was just borrowing the whole scene the way she was borrowing the pink diamond earrings. And this time, she knew, the eventual moment of reckoning was going to hurt. "Of course," she said to Atlas with a forced smile. "Lead the way." She gave her head a little toss as she followed him, feeling the heavy weight of the earrings that she no longer wanted to steal. She would let herself indulge this fantasy, would pretend that she was a normal girl at a party with a cute boy in a tux, for just a little bit longer. Watt studied the party, which swirled and flowed wildly around him with unabashed astonishment. A black-and-white parquet dance floor sprawled on each side of the canal, reminding Watt of a shining chessboard. 100 languages fell discordantly on his ears, too many people speaking at once for Nadia to even bother translating. Above him soared the two massive towers of the mirrors, rising up into the darkness to new, dazzling heights. For the first time, Watt felt like he finally understood the name. This was like a dream city, full of mirrors and reflections. Every last detail on one of the towers, every archway, every glittering square of glass, every curve in the railing of a balcony, had been cunningly doubled on the other side, in alabaster carbonite or smooth, dark neostone. Even the movements of the serving staff seemed choreographed to echo one another across the expanse of the canal. Everywhere Watt looked were women in black or white gowns, men in designer tuxes. There wasn't a single stitch of color in the whole evening, not even the bright red of a cherry at the bar. The effect was striking, like a work of art, as if Watt had stepped into one of those old two-dimensional hollows where everything was rendered in shades of gray. "Nadia, what do you think Cynthia meant by all that earlier?" He hadn't been able to stop thinking about the way she'd asked him to stay, and kissed him. What would he do when he saw her again? He felt a feverish anxiety at the thought, guilt and confusion roiling through him all at once. "You know what it meant, Watt," Nadia replied, whispering the words into his ear tenas. Watt was startled into alertness. Nadia sounded accusatory. "Did I do something wrong? All I know is that the situation has changed, and that it's becoming increasingly difficult for me to anticipate the outcome." "Girls are always complicated," he thought, a bit resentfully. "People aren't like tech, Watt. They aren't predictable, and they malfunction far more readily." "That's for damn sure." Cynthia had told him that actions spoke louder than words, but what did that mean when Watt's actions were reactive instead of proactive? He hadn't felt in control for a very long time, and he wondered, suddenly, if it was his own fault. He'd met Lita at the airport earlier, fully prepared to find her angry and scheming. They were flying over on Avery's family's plane, and Watt assumed that would make her tense. But Lita had been so relaxed, she didn't even comment on his lateness. She just turned to Watt when he arrived and told him it was a 5-hour flight, and what movie did he want to watch together? When her hand kept brushing his on the armrest, Watt hadn't said anything, but he hadn't moved his hand either. They'd barely seen Avery or anyone else the entire flight, but Watt had found that he didn't really care. "Nadia," he decided to ask, "do you think Lita trusts me yet?" "It's hard for me to estimate emotional states, except for yours," Nadia replied. "Anything I said about Lita's feelings would be pure speculation. It's easier for me to track your state of mind, since I have years of data on you, which is how I know, for instance, that you like Lita." It was the last thing he'd expected her to say.
"No, I don't."
Lita had drugged him and manipulated him and blackmailed him. And just because she'd made him laugh a few times, just because she was fun to kiss, didn't mean that Watt liked her. "Evidence points to the contrary. When you're with her, you exhibit all the typical physical signs of attraction. Your heart rate speeds up, your voice deepens. And then, of course, there's..."
"That doesn't count,"
he thought furiously, interrupting. Pinwheels of sparks flew from an enormous fire sculpture out into the night.
"Like you said, it's just data. And besides, physical attraction has nothing to do with liking.
You've mimicked her motions and gestures. Your blood rushes to the surface when you're near her, which, in over half of studies, has been linked to formation of emotional bonds," Nadia continued relentlessly.
"And you keep asking me about her, which..."
"You don't get it, okay?"
he snapped.
"How can you understand something you don't even feel?"
Nadia fell silent at that.
"What?"
Lita appeared at his side, looking stunning in a white Grecian-style gown.
"I've been looking for you. Calliope is here."
Watt's eyes flicked in the direction Lita was pointing. Atlas stood there with the girl from the photos. She looked lean and tan and ruthless, her dark hair spilling over her golden shoulders, her black dress skimming lightly over her form. And it all clicked ruthlessly into place. Are you spying on Calliope because she's with Atlas? Watt asked slowly. Was this Atlas and Avery all over again? Was Watt just the filler, the time killer? A meaningless distraction while Lita tried all the while to get the guy she actually wanted?
Yes, of course,
she said impatiently. Watt was stunned at how angry he felt. Well, Lita hadn't meant anything to him either, he reminded himself.
It's killing Avery,
Lita went on, and there was a strange note in her voice, a fierce protectiveness folded in with concern for Avery that silenced the high-pitched buzzing in Watt's brain.
Hold on, he said slowly. Let me get this straight. You're spying on Calliope because she's with Atlas, because you want Atlas to be with Avery?
Lita flinched.
I know it all must seem weird to you, but I can't bear to see Avery hurt. Besides, if this Calliope girl really is hiding something big, then Atlas has a right to the truth.
Watt still didn't understand.
I thought you and Avery weren't speaking.
He felt like an ass, inserting himself into girl drama. But he needed to know. Lita made an impatient, dismissive gesture.
That's old news. We're fine now. She grinned.
Nadia isn't on her A game if you didn't already know that.
But we avoided Avery on the plane today. I thought...
Lita laughed, making him feel even more foolish.
Avery was avoiding you, Watt. Because for some reason she thinks you're upset with her. Besides, I thought it might be more fun sitting just us,
she added, in a slightly less certain tone.
Oh, was all he could think to say.
He was still trying to understand this new world where Calliope was competing with Avery for Atlas, where Lita was okay with Avery and Atlas dating, and was being considerate of his feelings. He wondered where it left them.
Lita's arm tightened on his. Who is that with her?
Watt lifted his gaze back to Calliope. She'd left Atlas, almost furtively, and walked to where another woman stood at the edge of the terrace. Next to him, Lita was muttering at her contacts to zoom in. Watt didn't need to say anything because Nadia had already focused in on the woman. She looked like a slightly older version of Calliope, her features similar but more deeply etched by time and cynicism.
Avery told me Calliope lives with her mom, Lita offered. That must be her, right?
They glanced at each other, clearly getting the same idea at the same moment.
What? Could Nadia do facial reg on the mom?
Lita asked.
Already running it, Nadia replied, still huffy.
She'd switched from voice to text, layering the words over Watt's vision as if they were an incoming flicker.
I really am sorry.
It's okay. As you so aptly put it, I don't have any feelings for you to hurt. Watt knew what she said was true, and yet for some reason, it made him inexplicably sad. He watched as Calliope and her mom kept talking. At first, their expressions were clearly tense, their gestures rigid and tight, loaded with significance. Then Calliope's mom said something, and Calliope smiled uncertainly.
Nadia, are you picking up what they're saying?
Nadia sent him a transcript of their conversation without any commentary of her own. When he read it, Watt's eyebrows shot up in surprise.
Lita,
he started to say, but she shushed him impatiently.
I'm listening. Lip read,
she added, in answer to his questioning look. Lip read was an application designed for the hearing impaired. Watt wondered why he'd never thought to use it to eavesdrop. He wasn't sure whether to be impressed by Lita's brilliance or terrified. He leaned forward again to watch them more closely, and Nadia sent him the facial reg results on Calliope's mother.
Lita,
he croaked, grabbing her elbow and dragging her farther away, despite her protests.
You're going to want to see this.
Avery. Avery stood in the eye of a storm of people, laughing uproariously at every joke that was told,
looking spectacular in the attention-getting and exorbitantly expensive bridal gown that she'd bought on a whim and chopped off at the knees. Even the alteration spot had refused to make the drastic change, so Avery had set her beauty wand to scissors mode and sawed it off herself, watching the frothy layers of tulle, covered in hand-embroidered seed pearls and tiny crystals, fall to the floor of her closet with a surreal sense of detachment. The gown was so thick that it had taken several minutes of resolved focus to cut it all. Part of Avery had felt that she was watching herself from a distance. Normal Avery would have cried out at the sacrilege of cutting a couture wedding gown like that. But then, normal Avery had retreated into a shell, and the only thing left was this irrational Avery, volatile and highly unpredictable. She kept glancing over to where Atlas stood with Calliope, their heads bent together, their faces easy and smiling. The sight of them hurt more than Avery dared reveal. Risha grabbed her arm in surprise.
"Oh my God!"
She gasped, her gaze clearly following the same direction as Avery's.
"Are those your mom's pink earrings?"
Avery felt a stab of shock at the sight of her mom's iconic earrings in Calliope's ears.
"Looks like they are,"
she said, trying to sound like the question bored her so that Risha would drop it. Across the way, Calliope was leaning forward to whisper something, her gown so thin it was almost non-existent. Avery felt a darkness rising up in her, a vast, empty blackness, like a pool with no bottom. She reached down to feel along the uneven hem of her gown. For some reason, its frayed, flawed imperfection was reassuring.
"If your mom lent her those earrings, then she and Atlas must be getting serious,"
Risha pointed out.
"I don't know, and I don't care."
Avery realized she was grinding her back teeth, sending a dull ache throughout her jaw, and forced a tight smile.
"I'm going to get a drink."
She turned around abruptly, not inviting Risha to join her, and tried to push her way toward the bar. But of course, Avery Fuller didn't need to elbow through crowds like a normal person. They fell back instinctively, as if she had a spotlight trained on her, just like always. It was all the same, wasn't it? The same women moving across the terraces in a familiar click of heels, the same men murmuring to one another in low tones about the same things they always discussed, their eyebrows drawn together in the same cliched expression of concern. It all struck Avery as futile and purposeless. Here they were, halfway around the world, and yet everyone was stuck in their little loops, engaging in the old, tired flirtations, doomed to the same disappointments.
"Avery! I've been looking all over for you!"
Lita hurried toward her. Her face was flushed, her eyes shining fierce with determination.
"Here I am,"
Avery said uselessly. She searched within herself for the best smile she could find, but it came out shaky. Lita saw, and narrowed her gaze at Avery, a sort of knowing, you-didn't-fool-me expression.
"We need to talk. In private,"
Lita insisted. She led Avery backward through the party, through the enormous gilded arch that opened into a luxury housing development within the dark tower. A few partygoers were here, milling about the empty space, everything too pristine and perfect with that unlived-in construction glow. Avery had been in plenty of her father's towers while they were still unoccupied, and each time she found it a little unnerving. Empty windows gazed out from the apartment's front hallways like soulless eyes.
"What's going on?"
she asked when Lita finally came to a halt. They stepped too close to one of the for-sale apartments, and little ads popped up on both their contacts. They quickly edged closer to the middle of the street.
"I have news about Calliope."
Lita took a deep breath and lowered her voice dramatically.
"She's a con artist."
"What?" Lita gave a pitiless, dangerous smile as she explained. The story she told sounded more like fiction than reality. It was a story of two women, mother and daughter, who worked together, skimming a cheated, stolen existence off the surface of the world.
She told Avery how they tricked their way into expensive hotels and meals and clothes, always managing to vanish into thin air before actually paying. How Calliope's mom had been married over a dozen times, only to clean out the joint bank account after each wedding and disappear. How she and her daughter moved constantly from place to place, always changing their names and their fingerprints and their retinas, always finding new people to take advantage of.
"You can't be serious,"
Avery croaked when Lita was finally done talking. Lita pulled out her tablet and showed Avery photographic evidence. Calliope, in dozens of school photos under different aliases. Her mother being arrested for fraud in Marrakesh, then breaking out of prison under unusual circumstances. The marital records of Calliope's mom, with signed marriage certificates under all the fake names.
"I told you something was off about that girl,"
Lita exclaimed, sounding decidedly proud of herself for having figured it out.
"Don't you see? Atlas is her next target."
Avery took a step back, her red heels fumbling beneath her, and the stupid real estate ads scrolled across her vision again. She shook her head angrily to dispel them.
"How did you learn all this if they're always getting their retinas replaced?"
She still couldn't quite believe Lita's story. It felt too outlandish, too impossible.
"Facial recognition, it doesn't matter."
Lita gave a little wave to dismiss Avery's concerns.
"Don't you see? This whole thing isn't Atlas's fault. He's being played by a high-rolling professional con artist."
A small part of Avery marveled at the fact that Lita, of all people, was encouraging her to forgive Atlas.
"You don't understand. We ended things for good."
"Why?" Lita asked baldly. Avery scuffed her shoe back and forth on the shining new carbonite street in the perfect new community her dad had built.
"I wouldn't run away with him.
We went home with other people from the underwater party. It all just felt impossible.
I don't know," she sighed. "I'm not sure if we even have a chance anymore."
"Well, you'll never know if you don't at least try," Lita pointed out with ruthless pragmatism. She gave Avery a curious look.
"Besides, even if nothing happens between you and Atlas, you aren't really going to let that girl get away with trying to seduce him and steal from him, are you? We have to get rid of her."
Avery bit her lip, a spectrum of emotions tumbling confusedly through her mind.
"It's just so unbelievable."
"I know." Outside, they heard the sound of a lone violin playing itself.
"What are you going to do?"
Lita asked after a moment.
"Rip my mom's earrings from her earlobes,"
Avery said, to which Lita responded with a strangled, choked laugh.
"After that, I'm not sure."
"Whatever you're planning, let me know if I can help." Lita gave a small smile, and suddenly they'd traveled back in time, and it was just the two of them again in seventh grade, promising that they would always have each other's backs, plotting to take over the world. Avery pulled Lita into a brusque hug.
"Thank you. I don't know how you do it, but thank you," she murmured.
"Anything for you, Avery. Always." Seeming to sense that her friend needed some time alone, Lita retreated. Avery stayed a while, walking slowly through the overpriced ghost town, with its expensive finishes and soaring ceilings and private gated entrances to each townhouse. She needed to make sense of everything in her bruised, disoriented mind. Calliope was a fraud. She'd been targeting Atlas since the beginning, probably since Africa. Avery thought back to her conversation with Atlas after the under-the-sea party, when, in the cold light of day, they'd decided that it was too hard, that they should take a step back. She tried to remember which of them had been the one to say it first. She had a sinking, sticky feeling that it had been her. And anyway, hadn't she put the initial strain on their relationship by telling Atlas they couldn't run away together but refusing to explain why? Looking back, Avery felt like she'd leaned unfairly on Atlas in the wake of Eris's death, that she'd taken and taken from him, without ever stopping to ask how he was feeling. Between that and the secrecy, the fact that they were constantly on edge, living in fear that their parents might catch them, it was more than any relationship could bear. Then Calliope, or whatever the hell that girl's real name was, had come along, with her empty smile and empty words, and set her sights on Atlas. Did she actually think she could just stroll into their lives, take what she wanted, then breeze out of town again? That bitch had another thing coming. Avery missed Atlas so fiercely that the force of it clawed at her chest. She reached up roughly to wipe at her tears. She hadn't even realized she was crying. The day Atlas told her he loved her had been the happiest day of Avery's life. It was the first day she'd felt truly alive, as if the world up till that moment had existed only in shades of black and white, like this ridiculous party, then exploded into technicolor. She loved Atlas, and she always would. Loving him wasn't even a choice. It was hardwired into her very DNA, and Avery knew, deep down, that it was the only love her heart would ever be capable of for all the days of her life. She turned resolutely back to the party. There was no time to waste. Calliope followed her mom dutifully across the terrace to an empty area with a few scattered chairs and a lone figure standing at the railing. "What's going on?" she asked, trying to pull a few loose strands of her hair forward to hide her ears. Her mom didn't seem to have noticed Mrs. Fuller's earrings, which was decidedly out of character. Elise had an obsessive, almost photographic memory of everything she and Calliope owned. The fact that Calliope was wearing massive pink diamonds without Elise noticing was, more than anything else, an indicator that something big was going on. Calliope had already said hi to her mom, barely an hour ago. They'd run into each other on one of the lower terraces and exchanged a quick check-in on their progress for the evening. Calliope hadn't expected to see her again so soon. Then they reached the table, and the figure standing there resolved itself into Nadav Mizrahi. "Hi, Mr. Mizrahi." Calliope shot her mom a curious glance, trying to take her lead, but Elise was just smiling, her eyes bright with unshed tears. Calliope had never been as good as Elise at crying on demand. "You couldn't find Livia?" Calliope heard her mom ask, and her heart sank a little, because she realized what was happening. Calliope had witnessed enough of her mom's proposals to recognize them a mile away. Nadav shook his head. "I wanted her to be here for this, but that's all right. I can't wait any longer." To no one's surprise, Nadav sank down on one knee. He fumbled a little as he reached into his jacket. It was endearing. He clearly loved Calliope's mother, the more fool he, and produced a small velvet box. There was a fine sheen of sweat on his brow. "Elise," he said fervently. "I've only known you a few short weeks, but it feels like a lifetime. I want it to be the rest of our lifetime. Will you marry me?"
"Yes," Elise replied, breathless as a schoolgirl, holding out her hand so that he could slip the ring on her finger.
It was quite a good proposal, Calliope thought woodenly, even if it was a bit uninspired, getting engaged at a party that someone else had thrown. But at least Nadav hadn't rambled on for too long or said anything mushy. Belatedly, she remembered to clap, smiling up at her mom's new fiancé, her 14th, if memory served.
"Congratulations! I'm so happy for you both," she said, with a decent amount of surprise and enthusiasm.
Here it was, she thought sadly, the end of their time in New York. And then it will begin all over again. She leaned forward to examine the ring, and her breath caught in spite of herself. Elise's engagement rings were usually tacky and awful, because any guy foolish enough to fall for her tricks generally had bad taste. But this one was surprisingly lovely. A simple diamond solitaire surrounded by a beautiful pavé band. Calliope felt a pang of regret that they would have to strip it for parts and sell it on the resale market.
"Calliope, Livia and I are so looking forward to getting to know you better. I'm thrilled to be combining our families,"
Nadav launched into a description of all his utterly doomed plans. He thought that he and Elise were getting married in the Museum of Natural History, because they were both so enamored of it. Calliope almost laughed at the notion of Elise wanting to get married surrounded by dusty old stuffed taxidermied animals. And, he asked, what did they think of visiting Tel Aviv next month so that she and Elise could meet his extended family?
You should both move in right away. There's no need for you to live at the Nuage anymore, he added.
Of course, we'll have to start looking for a new apartment, one that's big enough for all of us. For a brief moment, Calliope imagined what it would be like, getting a taste of normal, stable life. Living in a home, a place that was actually hers, with unique and personal touches, rather than a glamorous, completely anonymous hotel. Actually being stepsisters with Livia. No longer conning innocent people and then leaving them in a constant whirlwind of senseless extravagance. It would have been weird, Calliope thought, actually doing what Nadav said, living with these two strangers. Yet she didn't completely hate the idea.
Oh, it's Livia,
Nadav murmured, tilting his head to receive an incoming flicker.
I'm going to find her and bring her here to share the good news.
He planted a kiss on Elise's mouth before heading off into the crowd.
So, what do you think?
Elise asked, lowering her voice the moment he was out of earshot.
It's a great ring, Mum. I'm sure you'll get 500,000 for it, at least. Nice work.
No, I meant, what did you think of the plan? Of everything Nadav said?
Calliope's stomach gave a strange lurch.
What do you mean?
I mean, what do you think of staying in New York?
Elise smiled and took her daughter's hands. Calliope couldn't answer. She felt suddenly irritable and nervous and unable to think clearly.
For how long?
We're staying, sweetie,
Elise repeated.
That is, if you want to.
Calliope sank wordlessly into one of the lucite armchairs and looked out into the night. It was so dark. The torches flickered in the rising wind, which was how Calliope knew they were real flames, not hollows. Some bizarre part of her wanted to walk over and touch the flames, just to be sure.
I've been thinking about what you said last week, that you wished we could stay somewhere for once.
There was a strange undercurrent to her mom's voice. This was unfamiliar ground for both of them. Calliope stayed very still.
I'm worried that I haven't always been the best parent for you, the best role model.
Elise looked down at her clasped hands, fidgeting with her new engagement ring.
I've been thinking a lot lately about that day when we left London.
So have I, Calliope thought, but she wasn't quite sure how to voice it.
I thought it was the right thing at the time, Elise said haltingly. God, when that woman hit you, the things I wanted to do. And after all the years of mistreatment I'd suffered at her hands, it seemed only fair that we take something from her and run.
It's okay, Mum.
Calliope could hear the angry roar of the canal far below, echoing the roiling, churning confusion of her thoughts. She'd had no idea that her mom felt conflicted like this, that she'd questioned their life too, when for so long it had seemed like she'd sailed blithely and blissfully along. Her mom sighed.
No, it's not. I'm the one who led you down this path, with no actual plan. I got to have a normal teenage experience with school and friends and relationships, but you...
I've experienced those things,
Calliope offered, but Elise waved her words away.
I don't know where the time went. I feel like I look at you, and it was just yesterday that we were running away from the Houghtons' house not 7 years ago. I should never have let it go on this long.
She lifted her gaze, and Calliope saw that her eyes were bright with unshed tears.
I've deprived you of the chance to live your life, a real life, and that wasn't fair to you. Where on earth will you end up when all of this is over?
Far off,
A chorus of shouts arose as an enormous cake floated out from the kitchens on a gleaming black platter. The buttercream icing was packed with microscopic, digestible LED chips, so that the entire cake seemed to light up like a torch. Calliope didn't answer her mom. She'd never really thought that far into the future, probably because she was afraid to.
"I was thinking," Elise went on, with a little more self-possession, "that we could make this a bit of a longer con, our longest one yet. We could get you into school, so that you could spend your senior year in New York. If you hate it, of course, we can always cut bait and leave on the next loop out. But we might as well see how it treats us first." She ventured a smile.
"It could be fun."
"You would do that?"
Calliope wanted what her mom was offering. So, so very much. But she also knew what it meant. That Elise would have to give up her independence and live with a man who, no matter how kind he was, she didn't love.
"There's nothing I wouldn't do for you,"
Elise said simply, as if that answered every other question.
"I hope you know that."
"Look who I found!"
Nadav stepped back onto the terrace with Livia in tow. Calliope stepped forward to give the other girl an impulsive hug.
"You look beautiful tonight," she gushed,
in a burst of charitable fondness. It was true. Her makeup made even Livia's pale, watery features into something interesting, and her ivory cloquet gown with its full skirt gave her skinny figure some much-needed shape.
"Thanks,"
Livia said stiffly, quickly extricating herself from Calliope's arms. She didn't return the compliment.
"Cheers to our new family!"
Nadav cried out, brandishing a cold bottle of champagne like a weapon as he popped the cork. The sound ricocheted loudly over the hum of the party, drawing a few glances their way, but Calliope didn't care. She noticed that Livia barely took the smallest, almost imperceptible sip of the champagne before setting it down, her lips pursed. Clearly she wasn't as pleased by this turn of events as Calliope was.
"Ah, well, you can't win 'em all," Calliope thought ruefully.
They were done conning. They wouldn't have to cheat or lie or betray anyone's trust, wouldn't have to put on fake names and couture dresses and start the whole vicious cycle over again. The entire world felt brighter, lighter, and full of infinite possibility. She would live in New York, for real, actually be herself, not some character her mom had made up to play the supporting role in their latest fiction. She could go to school and have friends and actually become someone. She couldn't wait to find out what Calliope Brown, New Yorker, was really like.
"Darling,"
her mom hissed with a sidelong glance as Nadav handed each of them a champagne flute.
"Are those new earrings? They look almost real."
Calliope tried desperately not to laugh, but the corners of her mouth lifted into a smile in spite of everything.
"Of course they're not real. They're beautiful, though, aren't they?"
Elise's unfamiliar new diamond sparkled in the moonlight as she held her glass towards Calliope's.
"Here's to this time."
"Here's to this time,"
Calliope repeated, and no one but her mother would have heard the hopeful, eager edge to the phrase she'd spoken so many times before.
Rylan. From where she stood on the edge of the dance floor, Rylan could see the mirroring of the mirrors to full effect. Three stone bridges dotted with lanterns spanned the canal, each of them so thick with people that they were near impossible to move across. Overhead, Ethereum bridges winked into being with a burst of light and then vanished seconds later, reminding Rylan of the planes she and Krissa used to watch from the elevated monorail station. From that far down, the planes had looked like lightning, vanishing from the sky almost the moment Rylan saw them. What an unexpected day it had been. Just last night, Rylan had pinged Lita from the view box. She'd half expected Lita to ignore her, but Lita picked up right away.
"What's up?"
she asked briskly, as if it weren't at all weird for Rylan Myers to be pinging her on a Friday night.
I want to come to Dubai, Rylan had explained, and from that instant it had all been a whirlwind. She'd bought a new dress, flown overseas on Avery's family's plane, and now here she was. She hadn't seen Cord yet, but the night was still young. The thrill of what he'd said last week, that he never stopped caring about her, buzzed warm and pleasant in her chest. She was determined to find him, and to find out what it meant. Her tablet buzzed with an incoming message. Curious, Rylan glanced at it, and was shocked into reading the whole thing. From Shane Radamajdi. No subject. Rylan, it read, I missed you in class yesterday, and I've just received notification from the registrar that you're dropping down to the base holography section. I hope this isn't true, but if it is, I understand. Please let me apologize for my actions the night of the cast party. The fault is mine for any and all lines that were crossed. Please also know how grateful I am for all your help with Salve Regina. You are incredibly talented, Rylan. The way you see the world is a gift. I am deeply sorry to lose you from the class. If you change your mind, I would be honored to have you back at any time. I look forward to following your holography career. Shane. Rylan felt like the wind had been knocked out of her. She would need some time to think about it, to sort through her various emotions and come to a decision. But just reading the email had made her feel better. She leaned against a hammered metal table, colored in a checkered black-and-white pattern. Maybe she would add the class back after all. Maybe. There you are! Lita sidled over, holding the skirts of her sweeping white gown with both hands so that she could move more easily. She smiled, and it transformed her face, softened the angularity of her features, brought out the liveliness in her eyes. She looked nothing like the angry, drugged-out girl who'd threatened Rylan on the roof that night. Now she actually looked happy. Hi, Lita, Rylan greeted her. Lita came to stand with her at the railing, following Rylan's gaze over the glimmering crowds, lit by the sparks from the fire fountains. There was a live human chorus singing on one of the other terraces. Their voices unfurled like interwoven ribbons into the night. So, Lita asked after a moment. How do you like your first party?
It's not my first party.
Rylan rolled her eyes in amused disbelief.
You could have fooled me, Lita replied evenly.
You came all the way here to Dubai, and now you're standing alone, not talking to anyone.
Come on, Rylan. You go to school with a lot of these people. Surely by now you can at least say hello to some of them.
Rylan flushed. Lita was right.
Just because I go to school with them doesn't mean I like them, she said defensively.
I don't see the problem. You can dislike someone and still have a conversation with them. God knows you detest me, and yet you are still talking to me.
But to Rylan's surprise, she found that she no longer hated Lita.
I don't understand you, she said quietly. A few months ago, you were threatening to destroy me. Now you're bringing me to parties, helping me get out of classes. What changed?
I changed.
Lita let out a heavy breath, but didn't tear her eyes from Rylan's.
And for the record, so have you. You're not the same girl I bullied at lunch that first day.
A new song had started playing over the speakers, yet Rylan had heard every word.
You're right, Rylan said, a smile creeping over her features. Now I'm way too tough for you to boss around.
You were always tough, Lita replied with a funny look. But now you're also smarter and more observant, and, I think, not quite so prickly. Besides, she added, smiling now, I don't need to bully you anymore. I've moved on to other victims lately.
Rylan couldn't tell whether the other girl was serious or joking. Maybe a little bit of both. A memory flitted into her mind, unbidden, from one day in the edit bay, when Shane had told her that holography was all about perspectives, that different people saw the world in different ways.
Rylan knew she had wronged so many people, and been wronged by them, too. Hyrule, Lita, Shane, and most of all, Cord. But maybe she needed to look at it from another angle.
Oh my God, Rylan. This is a party, and you look like you're trying to solve the mysteries of the universe.
Lita reached for a drink and handed it to her.
Relax, and try to smile, okay?
Rylan took a sip of the drink from the frosted white glass. It tasted bitter on her tongue and far too strong.
I can't drink this on an empty stomach, she protested.
I know, I'm starving. Have you seen the risotto balls? They look incredible. Without another word, Lita was looping her arm in Rylan's and dragging her toward one of the food stations. For a moment, Rylan hesitated. She still wanted to find Cord. But then she remembered that there were still hours left in this party, and she was hungry, and it was kind of nice not hating Lita anymore. How strangely the world worked sometimes, that Rylan Myers and Lita Cole were off to find risotto together, forming a bizarre sort of truce under the soft, glittered sky.
Calliope.
Calliope was standing alone near an arrangement of mood flowers, which currently glowed a soft, contented gold to match her happiness. Their so-called emotion detection system was pretty flimsy, based on heart rate and body temp, and supposedly pheromones, but for once Calliope thought their reading was actually spot on. She'd retreated to this side terrace to catch her breath and wait for Atlas to find her. Sure enough, she heard footsteps behind her this very moment. She turned around, a smile breaking over her features, only to see that it wasn't Atlas at all, but his sister. Avery looked like a creature half wild. She was wearing a shimmering white dress with an illusion neckline, sewn with several layers of lace and delicate pearls. The skirt cut off just above her knees, Calliope realized. Not evenly, but in a jagged line, as if it had been sliced with a blade. Her hair fell loose from its pins to surround her face in a tangled blonde cloud.
"I've been looking for you," Avery declared, something ominous in her tone.
"Hi, Avery."
Calliope lifted an eyebrow curiously. She had to ask.
"Is that a wedding dress?"
"It was, until I chopped it off and made it a party dress." "Well, it was certainly attention-getting."
"What can I do for you?"
"It's simple, really. I want you to get the hell out of New York." Avery spoke with distinct spaces between her words, as if she needed Calliope to understand the full import of every last syllable.
"Excuse me?"
Calliope demanded, but she had a sudden, nauseated feeling that Avery knew. Avery took a menacing step forward.
"I know the truth about you and your mom. So now you both are going to get the hell out of New York and never speak to Atlas again, since you were playing him this whole damn time for his money, since he was just a game to you."
Fear spiraled in eddies over Calliope's skin. She took a careful breath.
"It's not like that, okay?
What was your plan tonight, anyway? Were you about to run off with my mom's earrings?"
Calliope felt a stab of guilt at the accusation. She'd considered it, hadn't she? And she would have done it, too, not so long ago. Yet tonight, something had held her back. She hadn't wanted to treat the Fullers that way. She hadn't wanted to treat anyone that way anymore. Maybe she was developing that thing people called a conscience. She started to speak, but Avery was shaking her head at Calliope's silence, her perfect features twisted in disgust. Quietly, with all the dignity she could muster, Calliope reached up to unfasten the magnificent pink diamond still hooked in her ears. She held them out to Avery, who snatched them back.
"You have no idea what you're talking about," she maintained, watching as Avery switched out her own earrings for the pink diamonds.
"You don't even know me."
Avery looked up,
and her blue eyes were nothing but cruel. I already know far more than I ever wanted to know about you.
How did you find out? Was it Bryce?
More than anything, Calliope felt saddened by the fact that she and her mother would have to leave again. After all her mom's hard work, after her acceptance of Nadav's proposal, her decision that they could stay, they would have to turn tail and run yet again. Pick up new retinas and new identities and start tricking some poor person into giving them something. There would be no more Calliope Brown, that was for damned sure. The thought made her feel hollow inside. Avery looked up, startled.
What does Bryce have to do with this? Is he in on it?
Never mind.
10, 9, 8!
Around them, the party broke out in a sudden countdown to midnight. The first round of fireworks was about to start. They would continue all night, on the hour, all the way until morning. Calliope felt dazed that it was still so early, when in the course of a single evening her whole world had been radically upended. Twice. She kept her eyes on Avery, trying to interpret the dance of her emotions across her face. She'd predicted so many actions of so many people in her life, yet for the first time her instinct seemed to have failed her. Then Calliope thought of something her mom had said once, that if she was ever caught in a tough situation, if her lies weren't working, if all else failed, sometimes the best way out was to tell the truth. She'd never spoken her real name aloud.
"Don't tell anyone,"
her mom had drilled into her ever since they'd left London.
"It's too dangerous. It gives people power over you. Just give them another name, a fun name, anything you like."
It had been a game she'd played quite skillfully for years. She'd worn so many names, played so many cons. She had traded herself away in tiny little pieces with each lie, and now she had no idea what was left.
"Calliope isn't my real name," she said softly, so quietly that Avery had to lean forward to hear it beneath the drunken hum of the party.
"It's Beth." Avery's rage seemed to falter, as if that tiny grain of truth had momentarily stilled it.
"I wouldn't have pegged you for a Beth," she said, which was an odd thing to say.
Then fireworks erupted overhead, breaking the temporary spell.
"Whoever you are, I don't care. You need to be gone before we get back to New York. If I ever see you in the tower again, there will be hell to pay. Do you understand?"
Calliope clenched her jaw and stared unblinking at Avery. A flash of the old defiance scorched through her.
"Trust me. You've made yourself clear," she snapped,
and Avery stormed off. And so it was ending yet again. Calliope allowed herself a few minutes of melancholy, of gazing out at the water, wishing things were different, that she'd played her cards with better skill. Then she turned with a defeated sigh and started back toward the party. She intended to enjoy the rest of the night. Not with Atlas, since Avery would surely be watching him. But with anyone, or even alone, it didn't matter. None of it mattered anymore. Tomorrow morning she would tell her mom the truth, and they would have to skip town as quickly and silently as possible. Calliope wasn't particularly worried about the details. They'd fled many places in their day, and under worse circumstances than this. She knew they would get out all right. But after her mom's announcement, she'd allowed herself to hope that this time might actually be different. Now she felt strangely adrift, as if she'd been offered something bright and wonderful, only to have it snatched away. At the thought of going to another city, doing recon work and starting another con and stealing from another trusting, hapless person, her entire body ached. She felt tired and saddened and alone. For a moment, she thought she heard a sound from far off, as if someone had cried out, echoing the mournful wail of Calliope's own heart. But when she listened again, it wasn't there. She turned slowly, the elegant fishtail of her gown swishing out behind her. For one last night, she was going to be Calliope Brown. Consequences be damned.
Watt. Watt's arms closed around Lita from behind.
"Where'd you disappear to?"
he murmured into her hair, which smelled of dusty roses, a smell he'd grown quite accustomed to these past few weeks.
"I was off meddling," Lita said mischievously.
"Were you?"
Watt released his arms to spin her around. She looked radiant, her face lit up from within, her whole being almost floating off the terrace where they stood.
"I'm trying to get Rylan back with Cord. It might take a while, though. They're both being a little stubborn."
"A few months ago you were threatening Rylan, and now you've gone all Emma Woodhouse on her?"
Watt was amused. Lita tilted her head at him.
"Am I mistaken, or did you just make a Jane Austen reference? Will wonders never cease?"
"Hey, I can read,"
Watt protested, though in truth Nadia had fed him that line. He decided to change the subject.
"Anyway, what makes you think you should be the one to decide whether Cord and Rylan are together?"
"Because I know best," Lita declared, as if it were self-evident.
"Because you enjoy playing puppeteer with other people's lives."
"Oh, please, like you don't."
"Just because I could spend all my time spying on other people doesn't mean that I choose to do it. I usually end up offloading my surveillance on Nadia. You'd be surprised how boring it can be."
"Except for spying on me, of course," Lita quipped.
"Right, of course."
Watt stifled a grin. Nadia prompted him toward a garden on the far side of the terrace. It looked nice, so Watt took Lita's hand and led her there, down a pathway lined with trees and enormous flowering blossoms.
"Bring up Eris," Nadia urged him.
"Now is the right time."
"Not right now, Nadia, okay?"
"This is your chance," Nadia insisted.
"Don't you want to be free of Lita?"
Lita gave him a squeeze, her hand still clasped firmly in his, and Watt was no longer sure of anything. He glanced at Lita, taking in her elegant profile, the impulsive way she moved in her flowing white dress, everything about her. Her eyes, her hands, her mouth, softened in the dimness. He thought of all the different sides of Lita he'd come to know. Her ruthless, fierce determination, her aching vulnerabilities, her nightmares, her incredible brilliance. The one thing Lita Cole wasn't, he thought, was uncertain.
"You really do think you always know best, don't you?"
he mused.
"I know I do," she countered.
"Well then, if you know best, what should I be doing differently?"
He'd framed the question as a joke, but suddenly he was curious to know.
"Where do I begin? For starters, you could get rid of that terrible Nerd Nation t-shirt you always wear." "I won that t-shirt in a science fair,"
Watt began, but Lita was talking over him, ignoring the protest.
"You could pay a little more attention to your family."
A new seriousness settled over her small, passionate face. "They really care about you, Watt. I can tell. And unlike mine, they would never lie to you." That last comment made him inexplicably sad. But before he could press on it, Lita had shaken it off. Watt decided to let the moment pass.
"As for right now, you could start by kissing me," she concluded.
There was no disobeying a direct order. Finally, they pulled away and turned deeper into the garden. Everything was silent. It felt to Watt like they were the only two people in the world. Lita seemed content not to say anything, just to tip her face up to the sky and breathe slowly.
"I lied," she said suddenly, and her voice was very small.
Watt looked at her in confusion.
"I don't always know best.
especially for myself. There are so many things I should have done differently.
Lita, we've all made mistakes.